ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam.
Stay close to the mic. Most of your audience is actually listening.
Canto 11, chapter 17, verse 31. Please repeat. Yadi asau chandasam lokam. Yajyasau chandasam lokam arokshyan brahma vishtapam arokshyan brahma vishtapam guruhe vinyased deham guruhe vinyased deham Swadhyā Nyartam Brihadvrataha Swadhyā Nyartam Brihadvrataha Yajyasau Chandasam Lokam Arukshan Brahma Vishtapam Guruve vinyase deham Swadhyayartam brihadvrataha Yajyasau chantasam lokam Arokshan brahma vishtapam Guruve vinyase deham Swadhyayartham brihadvrataha Yadi If Asau That student Chandasam Lokam The Maharloka planet Arokshyan Desiring to ascend to Brahma Vishtapam Brahma Loka Gurave Unto the Guru Vinyasit He should offer Deham His body Swa Adhyaya Of superior Vedic studies Artam for the purpose Brihat Bhrataha Observing the powerful vow of perpetual celibacy Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki Translation If the brahmachari student desires to ascend to the Maharloka or Brahmaloka planets, then he should completely surrender his activities to the spiritual master and, observing the powerful vow of perpetual celibacy, dedicate himself to superior Vedic studies. Purport. One who desires the supreme perfection of life must engage his body, mind, and words in the service of a bona fide spiritual master. One desiring elevation to superior planets, such as Brahmaloka and Maharloka, must fully engage in the spiritual master's service. We can thus imagine the sincerity of purpose and service required to achieve the Krishna Loka planet, which lies far beyond the material universe. Om Jnanati Marandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavati Paschacha Deshatarine Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavnavebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So, in the last verse, in the first sentence of the purport, we're hearing this term, Upa Korbana Brahmachari. So, it's explained here, who enters the Grihastha Ashram, or family life, after completing his Vedic education. And so there's in a purport in the Bhagavad Gita in the 6th chapter, Prabhupada says, one who, however, follows the rules and regulations of married life, having a sexual relationship only with his wife, and that also under regulation, is also called a brahmachari. Such a restrained householder, brahmachari, may be accepted in the bhakti school, but the jnana and dhyana schools do not even admit householder brahmacharis. They require complete abstinence without compromise. In the bhakti school, a householder brahmachari is allowed controlled sex life because the cult of bhakti yoga is so powerful that one automatically loses sexual attraction, being engaged in the superior service of the Lord. So I thought this was a good point to bring out, because so many times, especially in the Bhakta program, and we have a lot of new guys coming and going, we experience sometimes we get a little maybe too fired up or a little too excited and easily get into some misconceptions about brahmacharya. So, you know, sometimes there's the tendency to be totally absorbed in being in the ashram, saffron set, as Devamrita Maharaj calls it, and even starting to look at other Vaishnavs, other householders, as lower, or, oh, they have material desires, or they're attached, or criticizing in this kind of mood. Has anybody... had any thoughts like this or seen this? You know, we see this. You have something? If you want to.
I think it goes both ways. I think that Grihasthas can be like, oh, Brahmacharya is kind of easy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, worry about making paying bills or taking care of kids or whatever. And then on the other flip side, you have, you know, or your house is going to be like, oh, they're not doing all this stuff.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. On the flips, should I maybe just repeat in the microphone? I think that a lot of times Grihasthas can maybe become a little prideful or maybe a little critical brahmacharis, saying, oh, brahmacharis have it easy. They don't have to pay bills. They don't have to deal with kids. They don't have to worry about being late to work. And they can say, you know, oh, brahmacharis, all they do is, you know, they're just reading Shastra all day. They're not actually like doing anything productive. But then the other trap on the other side of the brahmacharis, it can be like you were just pointing out, Prabhu, was that you can feel like, oh, I'm so detached. And look at these householders not coming to Mangala Arati, or look at these householders, you know, with their nice cars and stuff, like they have to be attached. And
yeah, nice point. Yeah, can go both ways. So we in the nectar of instruction, we hear in the beginning, we have to avoid this thing niyamagraha, which basically means, you know, performing rules and regulations just for the sake of doing them, not actually for spiritual advancement. And Rupa Goswami defines fanatic as one who's doing all these rules and regulations, but they don't know why. That's actually a Shastric definition of a fanatic. You don't know why. Because, and just like we read here, he should dedicate himself to superior Vedic studies. And so also we read, like, especially jnanis will study the Vedas. But Prabhupada says that you cannot actually understand the Vedas simply by studying the Vedas. We learn how to get knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita. Can anybody say a verse? Does anybody know a verse that in the Bhagavad Gita that explains how to get knowledge?
Well, I guess that's one. Tisham satta yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. That to one who is fully dedicated to serving me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Yeah, I was thinking tad vidhi pranipatena paripashnena seva. By approaching a spiritual master. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they've seen the truth. But yeah, that also is a nice one. You know, like we also read in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita how to read the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, sometimes people miss that part. And then they come with all kinds of misconceptions. In the introduction, Krishna tells us that the Bhagavad Gita must be received in the same mood, same submissive mood as Arjuna. If you are not approaching the Bhagavad Gita in that mood, you cannot understand. And so, you can approach the Gita thinking, by my intelligence, by my prowess, I can learn this, just memorize all the shlokas. Anybody can do that if they really wanted to. But that doesn't mean you have any vigyan. You can get gyan, but you need vigyan also. Gyan is in book knowledge. Vigyan is realized knowledge by application of what you find in the books. So The point is, it's not by study of the Vedas alone that you can reach perfection. There must be service and devotion to your spiritual master. And so, this is another hang-up, you know, potentially. So we don't want to do all these rules and regulations, be absorbed in rules and regulations consciousness, and not know why. Because the rules and regulations are there to help us come to the mode of goodness, which is the springboard to Shuddhasattva. Because we're not even in the mode of goodness. We read in the Bhagavatam maybe a week and a half ago that in Kali Yuga everyone's predominantly in the modes of passion and ignorance. And you can see this practically in ourselves and in the general state of society. You know, on the drive, we drove here from Denver, and I don't know if anybody else knew. I didn't know that in Texas there's like a theme, to the state of, like, there's these billboards saying the beef-loving Texans, like a meat-eating theme. I didn't know that. But this is, you know, the propaganda to, you know, stimulate our sense gratificatory desires and give them our money. That's really what they want. And whenever you eat meat and when you take intoxication, there's the marijuana lawyer. You know, like if you get busted, apparently marijuana is not legal in Texas. It is legal in Colorado. But it was like, okay, we have, we can protect you. So it's, you know, this, every billboard, basically everything was sense gratification. But anyway, the point being that if we're engaging in this sense gratification, then we become stooped in the modes of ignorance, modes of passion and ignorance, and you become easy to control, actually. That's in the Brahmacharya Handbook. Bhakti Vikas Swami is talking about mind control by propaganda. So anyway, we have to know why we're doing performing rules and regulations. And we know ultimately the goal is we want to love Krishna. You know, so easily we can get caught up in, oh, you know, I'm going to practice some vairagya. I'm renounced. Let me stop eating and, you know, do all these things. But if they're not actually in service, these things, then they'll have an opposite effect. In the Bhagavad Gita, we hear how one who's performing penances in the wrong consciousness, their heart becomes hard, become hard-hearted. And I was just talking with Keshava Bharati Maharaj about this last night. And he was saying, yes, chant 16 rounds and follow the principles is enough. You know, this is our vairagya. You actually do that. Bring people to Krishna consciousness and follow the principles. Chanting 16 rounds, it's enough. I remember when I first came to Krishna consciousness, there was a senior devotee. I was really fired up, so I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to chant 40 rounds a day or something. And then he was just like, yeah, 16 is enough. And I was like, you know, I didn't get it. But yeah, you know, to actually follow strictly in a sustainable way, not come in, you know, sleeping on the hard floor with nothing for the wrong reason, eating nothing, five spoonfuls of khichdi a day, and so on like this, then usually they, you know, like we heard Rasika Shiromani explaining, you have a rubber band effect. If you go too far in one direction, then you tend to rubber band to the other direction. Next thing you know, that so-called austere brahmachari is, you know, disappeared one day, and now he's working at an ice cream shop, you know, eating ice cream all day or something, you know. And this happens. So we have to be, cool in our decisions. Don't be passionate. I must be austere. We have to be honest with ourselves where we're at. If a result of your penances is that your mind's disturbed, that's a good indication that something's not right in your practice. Anyway, in the purport, Prabhupada says, he's explaining that if one desires to go to higher planets, then he must fully engage in the spiritual master's service. And so it could be taken from this that it appears to be a prerequisite to enter into particularly Maharloka and Brahmaloka to be fully absorbed in the service of the spiritual master. And then we hear next, he says, we can thus imagine the sincerity of purpose and service required to achieve the Krishna Loka planet. So also the prerequisites being implied here is sincerity of purpose and service. If you're serving the spiritual master with some motivation of improving your material situation, you'll get that if you're totally bent on it. If you're determined with these material desires and you approach Krishna, he'll give them to you. Of course, in such a way that also will be purifying. And, you know, will help you see that actually this is not what I want. But this is really important, the sincerity of purpose. Ananda Murari Prabhu in Denver, he explains this word sincere in a very nice way. I think most of us have heard, maybe not everybody. So he explains that the word sincere comes from, I think, French, the French language, and or Italian. And, you know, they would use this word while people would go to buy marble, slabs of marble. They would go, and, you know, the marble wallahs would put a coating of wax over the slabs. And this would, the wax would fill in all imperfections, holes and dings and things in the marble. And they would, you know, rip people off, basically. So people would come and say, is this marble sincere? Meaning, you know, if there's holes and imperfections, they're not being covered over, right? Is this marble sincere? It means, is it the real thing? Is it uncovered? And so, also, if you look up the definition of sincere on Google, you'll get a similar definition. So, when we hear about sincerity of purpose, you have to genuinely want to advance. You have to genuinely want to please Krishna without motivation. I want to please Krishna because I want Krishna to, I want to actually, you know, I want Krishna to be happy. I want Krishna to be pleased. So, you know, anybody can come and sometimes people look like pure devotees because some people can easily follow principles, yeah? Doing pious activities externally. But then also, you know, they have so many other things going on when they're not in the temple. And so they look like pure devotees, but they're not able to give everything up for Krishna, which is actually pure devotional service. Giving everything up, serving Krishna. Doesn't mean literally, but in consciousness, everything should be offered to Krishna. Otherwise, it's karma mishra bhakti. It's mixed. So, anyway, are there any questions or comments about anything?
So a lot of the time we're very covered over and we think that we're doing pretty good and that we don't have any problems, we don't have any faults. How is it, what's the best way to be honest about with ourselves, and how can we see the things that we need to work on?
Well, yeah, you know, pride sets in and you may not even be aware. But what was your question? Yeah, you become deluded. You're deluded by false pride. And so how do we even see that? Well, if you're, especially if you're attempting to surrender to Krishna, serve Krishna, you know, Krishna helps us with that. You know, if you're puffed up, lusty, you know, looking for sense gratification. But you really want to give up this state of mind and you want to perform devotional service, then we have, well, everyone's experiencing when Krishna gives you a test or a check, yeah. You know, we all have our ideas. You know, like you know, I was just talking to Keshav Bharti Maharaj an hour ago, and actually, I was asking him to give class, but he was saying, you know, yeah, you know, you easily, he's talking about giving class, you know. Anybody, you know, you can quote a bunch of shlokas from some, you know, rare, you know, like shastras people don't know about, and you can, pride can come set in very easily. But we're, you know, when that happens to a sincere devotee, meaning your purpose is, I really want to at least want to be sincere, you know, at least wanting to be sincere. Then Krishna will, like for giving class, for example, if you have pride, then, you know, you'll come up and your mind will go blank and you have no idea what to say, and then everyone's just looking at you and you'll be embarrassed. And then, it'll crush your pride. You know, you think I'm so smart. But then you get up in front of everyone to give class, and then you can't say anything. So just by looking at yourself, you know, I'm such a great kirtan leader, you know. Then all this also ties in with the point about Niyamagraha earlier. We have to know why we're doing these things. If you're doing kirtan, you know, it's very easy to slip into a passionate mood of enjoyment in kirtan, and you know, become absorbed in maybe the musical aspect of kirtan, for example. Like, look how nice I can play the instruments and how perfect, you know, how harmoniously I can sing. And but it's not about that. Those things should be there, you know, if you're performing kirtan for the pleasure of Krishna. You know, we want things to be nice. But that's not the goal of our kirtan, is to play the mridanga like very well or whatever. Actually, you know, even Lord Chaitanya had all expert kirtaniyas there in the kirtans. So that should be there. But our Gurudev told me that what's on the inside is what pleases Krishna. So, and you can experience that in the kirtan quality. And just like also the when you speak with somebody, you know, you were talking about vomit yesterday in class. the word vomit would go to being used as not literally meaning vomit, meaning what you put out vibrationally, specifically, what you speak. And so, you know, imagine if you just listen to recordings of people glorifying themselves all day, you know, like, yeah, I'm so great, you know, people just puffed up. Imagine if you listen to that, this, what you're going to speak. Anyway, getting back to the point, or to the question, you know, Krishna consciousness is meant to be introspective to different degrees depending on your capability. But we have to introspect and watch ourselves, observe ourselves. And we have to read, and we have to apply what we read. If the book says, if Prabhupada says, don't be envious, it's very bad, then we should ask ourselves, am I envious? You know? Especially, you know, envy will attack you and you won't know that it's envy. Sometimes it's not so obvious. You know, somebody comes in and you have a bad vibration about them. Basically, you just don't like someone. Usually that it's envy. You're not thinking, you know, I really want what they have. You're just thinking, I don't like them. But usually that it comes from envy, one way or another. So we have to observe ourselves. And we also, depending on pride or envy, we have to know how to counteract these enemies, basically. Well, like if you're envious, someone comes, you're really into kirtan, and you really want to play the mridanga nice for Krishna. And someone comes, you know, this happens, you know. You're the only brahmachari in the temple. Absorb yourself in the mridanga. You come and you play for the deities every day. All the devotees are like, wow, you know, we really like your kirtans, you know. And subtly you're thinking, yes. Yes. Then some 9-year-old kid comes and he plays the mridanga 10 times better than you one day. And you feel negative. You're envious, yeah. Anyway, the point being, how to counteract envy is by is serving that person personally. You know, somebody cooks better than you, you want to cook, and someone cooks better than you, and don't be, criticize them. Don't try to find something to criticize. You appreciate them. Because that's what envy is perverted appreciation. If we can just go straight to appreciation, it saves us a lot of trouble. You know? And we can train our minds to do that. You know? When we have a strong enough desire, we can look for the good qualities in others. And we have to do that. You know? Depending on our advancement. Eventually, we have to do that. Because someone who's Krishna conscious can see that everybody is are parts of Krishna. And so if you're actually seeing Krishna and everybody's connection with Krishna, you want to treat them nice. You want to appreciate them. And also it is said that, you know, to the degree that you find faults with others, you develop those faults. And to the degree that you appreciate others' good qualities, you develop those also. And that phrase, Atmavan Manyate Jagat, you know, we tend to see everybody in the whole world as we are. You know? Oh, that guy's arrogant. You know? He just thinks he's so great. But, I mean, if you look at the person thinking that, what do they think? They think I'm so great. I can just judge others. Yeah. It's always like that. So we have to really, especially when dealing with devotees, because no devotee is ordinary. Even the devotee who shows up on Sunday and hangs out in the back corner and doesn't talk to anybody. Yeah. You don't know. You don't know who that is. One time in New Vrindavan, where I used to live, one morning some guy came in, which you don't have people off the street walking in the temple because, you know, it's far away from everything. It's a farm community. Anyway, some guy came in the temple and he was just acting very strange. He was chanting japa, but he was singing his japa very loud, very slow. And he was the temple president was standing in his usual spot, getting absorbed in his japa. And there was a mat right next to his feet, and this guy came over and sat down like inches from the temple president's legs. And then he laid down and started rolling like a steamroller on the ground, chanting japa. Like he was rolling around on the ground, he was doing all kinds of weird stuff. And actually, no one in the temple could chant their japa because of this guy, because everybody was laughing at him. I was too. What he was doing was just so bizarre and funny. You know? And anyway, we all concluded basically that he was on LSD or something. So we told him, "Yeah, you can't do that. You gotta be like cool." You know? But then I thought, you know, you don't know who this is. Yeah. It could be like, you know, Lord Chaitanya disguised or something. But anyway, I talked to him later and I asked him. He said he just came up to me and he knew my name. He said, "Oh, you must be Bhakta so-and-so." And I was like, "Yeah." And he said, "Yeah, this one guy sent me here. This guy I met in Pittsburgh told him to come and ask for me." So I just met him and he said, do you want a brownie? Would you like a brownie? I was like, no thanks. I was like, is there drugs in it? You know, because everybody thought he was on LSD. But he said no, and I asked him kind of straightforwardly, like, are you like sober, you know? And he said, yeah, I'm just really into free expressing myself freely. Anyway, the point is you can't judge people. He turned out to be very nice, actually. Spent the whole day doing service with him and came back several times. And I'm still friends with him. So you can't judge people. But we should look at ourselves before we look at others. You know, you should find the good qualities in others. We should train our mind to do that automatically. Because every time you find some fault, or, you know, sometimes you get an idea about somebody and you'll act on it, you know, it always results in in my experience, if I have some idea about some devotee, I'm usually wrong. Yeah. If it's a negative thing, I think, oh, you know, whatever, this devotee, this or that, doesn't matter. You know, so we should be very cautious with devotees, and we should look at ourselves as much as possible. And if you're finding fault, you know, they say when you point your finger, more fingers are pointing at you than anyone else. And this is true. You can see it. You know, I experienced, you know, I first can't join the New Vrindavan, and I was reading Prabhupada's books, and I was very fired up about the morning program and japa and everything. And I would go and basically barely anyone else would go to Mangal Arati. And so, you know, my natural tendency was start fault finding, you know. Like, this guy never comes to Mangal Arati. Now, I'm waking up at 3 every day and whatever. But then, you know, time passed, and then, you know, next thing I knew, I wake up and it's 7 o'clock. You find the fault and you'll do that same thing. So we have to carefully guard against offenses and material desires. Guard against material desires. Otherwise, you can't get the taste. Can't get the ruchi. These things destroy your taste. You know, if you have a taste for sense gratification, and you act on that and you're not careful, you know, instead of reading Bhagavatam, why read Bhagavatam when you can go to, I don't know, some movie or something, I don't know. You know, go make a bunch of money, you know. So, yeah, we have to guard against material desires. Of course, there has to be a balance according to our capacity. But we must keep going. We're hearing last night. Devotees can, you know, sometimes if a devotee performs some abominable activity, he's still to be considered saintly because of he's properly situated in his determination. And so Maharaj said something very nice last night about that. He said, just keep going, you know, by continuing on the path, performing devotional service, doing everything you're doing, you'll get purified of whatever it is. So this is a very important thing to know. Because also in this other purport, says, this practice is very essential for the student's advancement in spiritual life, but at the moment, such brahmachari or unmarried celibate life is not at all possible. The social construction of the world has changed so much that there is no possibility of one's practicing celibacy from the beginning of student life. Throughout the world, there are many institutions for different departments of knowledge, but there is no recognized institution where students can be educated in the brahmachari principles. So, according to that purport, you're trying to do the impossible. Yeah. But, you know, in other places that we read, that it is possible. It's a gradual process. And we were hearing explicitly how to do it last night. But one couple important things are, you have to, you know, they say Krishna is the supreme in every way, that he is the supreme self. And by connecting with Krishna, you naturally are becoming more in touch with yourself. Simultaneously, one and different. But mystically, by connecting with Krishna, you will become more connected in yourself. And so this is a natural phenomenon when we're practicing bhakti, that we are introspecting. And we have to follow what's in the books. You have to apply it. And so if you do these things, then you get purified. Is there any other questions? Yes, Prabhu, we have the mic.
We've heard about Gopal Bhatta Goswami, that he could never listen to any misbehavior of devotees. He would never listen to any of that. And as far as he was concerned, everybody's just serving Krishna. That's all. He had a criticism never left his lips. He was famous for that. In today's age, we've met Srila Radhanath Swami. I've spent a couple of weeks with Srila Radhanath Swami and noticed that he never has a bad thing to say about anybody. If he meets somebody that's everybody else thinks is completely crazy, he says, "It's been a pleasure and an honor to meet you," to that person. And he sincerely means it. So I'm wondering how such moods of humility are coincide with management. Like, because in management there's so much, you have to find, you see things that are wrong, you have to make them right. So how does that sort of blend, you know, when you never seeing any fault in anybody, but at the same time you have to see what's wrong and make it into a better situation?
Oh, nice. Thank you. Yeah, well, my realization is service attitude, because, you know, it's our, if you're a manager, then it's your service to manage others. Like Bhakta program, you know, somebody has to correct the Bhaktas. A lot of times, a lot of people like to correct the Bhaktas, but, no, actually, it's supposed to be coming from one place, and that's that person's service. So that person, it's their responsibility to do it with the right intention, like, you know, not because you're frustrated, a bhakta can't do anything right, but because, you know, out of care and love, you tell them. And that has to be there. And that comes, that care and love is felt when we approach, when it's approached with the service attitude. You know, I'm serving this devotee. So that's my main realization. Yeah. And, you know, there's so much you have to tolerate. You know, like tolerance. My Guru Maharaj told me 2 years ago, you know, I never really wanted to live in the city, or, you know, I'm from West Virginia. Never wanted to live in the city, never really wanted to be a man, you know, manage anything, or, you know. But, you know, this is the service, my service. And so he told me, like, 2 years ago, he's like, you're here to learn tolerance. And I always thought I was pretty tolerant, but it was revealed to me, I was shown that I'm not. You know, like, I was in New Vrindavan, I had my own room, you know. Go in the Brahmacharya ashram with 15 guys in a little house, try to go to sleep early, you know, good luck. But you have to tolerate, you know. So, yeah, and especially with management, it's not practical to expect everybody to be like robots and perfect. You know, it's not supposed to be like that. But, you know, by encouragement and positivity and care, service attitude, you know, Prabhupada says that you can't have, you know, where there's love, there is also tolerance. You know? If you don't have tolerance, how can you actually, you know, like, you know, intolerance gets in the way. You can't love somebody. You can't serve them, you know. Someone's doing something that's difficult for you to tolerate, or you don't tolerate. How can you act in service, you know, at that time? You know? You're just trying to get the heck out of there. Anyway, that's my realization, is service attitude. You know, and I heard a pastime with Radhanath Maharaj about when he first went to the Chaupati. When he first went there, you know, there was like dissension between the brahmacharis and the grihastas. They were distant, they weren't really... The community was a little divided. And so we hear that he went to the grihastas and he glorified the brahmacharis. And then he went to the brahmacharis and he glorified the grihastas. And he kept doing this. And over time, it grew into what it is today. Very unified. So... we have to, you know, seek out the good qualities in others. I think it was Vaisheshika, no, it was Devamrita Maharaj came to Denver just recently, and he said, it's the duty of a manager or a leader to point out when somebody's doing something right. That's what they should do. And, yeah, we've experienced that if somebody's doing something wrong and they know it, and you just don't say anything, you just tolerate it. And Prabhupada defines tolerance as making something negative into a positive, which is interesting. But if you tolerate it, which means you're not affected, or if you are disturbed by it, then nobody knows. That's actually, you know, they don't know. You just look happy. You're happy either way. Naturally, that person, something happens. That person will come and say, "Man, you know, I'm sorry, I know I've been doing this lately, or, and they feel actually loved. Whereas if I just, or if someone just, you know, all the time, like, you know, serve with your right hand, boo, or whatever, all day long, that does do it worse. They won't listen. They would not respect that. Is that okay? Thank you. Anything else? Yes? I'll just say one other thing. When I came to the temple, I really hated authority, you know. I really had absolutely no respect for authority at all. And actually, when my experience in life was, even the adults around me didn't know what they were talking about, so if they were wrong, then I would tell them about it, or I would, you know, just completely disregard what they said anyway. So I came to the temple in New Vrindavan, and then, you know, I was the only brahmacharya there. And so the temple president would come sometimes. I remember the first time he said, "Hey, can you meet me in my office at 2:00? And he walked away. And I was like, "Yeah." And I was just in anxiety, like, oh man, you know, what did I do? You know, because I was never called into any office for anything good before that, you know. So I was thinking, I would go and he would just be very happy, like, "How's everything going, you know? You know, we're very happy. You're doing your service so nice," and just be very nice. And then eventually, like over a year or more, he would say, "Can you come meet me in my office?" And I'd be like happy, like, "Yeah, I get some association," you know. And because he was so loving and nice, I really respected him. And so that was a huge lesson for me, you know. Anyway.
This thought just came to mind about Niyamagraha and following just rules and regulations for the sake of following rules and regulations, when you're like, you know, "Prabhu, don't serve with your right hand." I'm just like thinking of something really mundane we can correct somebody on. Or like, for instance, like when I first came to Krishna consciousness, and I was like, you know, first Mangalarti, I remember there's this one, he's kind of like an adventurer kid that was, you know, maybe he wasn't home, he was homeless, maybe not, I don't know, but he was kind of wandering around. And I remember he was sitting in the temple, he's doing japa with us, and he had his feet out, the tulsi, and I went up to him, like, I'm like, "Hey, don't stick your feet out the tulsi, it's disrespectful." And I was thinking to myself, like, man, I can say it's disrespectful, but I really don't know why it's disrespectful. Or, like, this is in my, like, a very neophyte state. Like, I can't, like, fully comprehend why it's disrespectful. And I think that, and it's hard, that's, like, you know, Niyamagraha. When we start correcting people without, you know, that we're not really realized in that kind of etiquette.
Well, yeah, I mean, really, you should correct people if it's your service, right? And, like, you know, Swami Prabhupada was saying the other day, he was talking about, you know, because he corrects people a lot, everybody knows. Sorry, but what happens? I mean, but also he's in charge of the morning program. And he's organizing it, so he's saying, "Yes, the speaker should be here, and this is how this should be, and you know, whatever." So it's actually his service most of the time. And, you know, if someone comes and it's not their service, you get like a, there's a difference. But, you know, like, Swami Prabhupada asked me, we were taking prasadam, and he said, "You never correct me. I've never corrected him ever." And He said, you're too polite or something. And I said, yeah, because it's not my service. And it was like, that's right, you know, like, you should correct someone if it's your service to do, and you should do it out of service. Whenever you take it upon yourself to correct, you know, like, you know, I had a lot of correction from senior devotees, and it really helped me. And they were in the mood of, like, care, you know, like, there's no program where I join, there's no anything. And senior devotees were, like, helping me out, and I felt that. But anyway, yeah, there's a technique when you, if there's, like, I know about the Bhakta program, that's kind of, like, where I'm studying as far as management goes, ashram management. So, yeah, there's a recommended way of correction is sometimes it's best in the moment, you know, you catch someone doing something and say, hey, don't forget to do that. Should be done nice. But most of the time you, like, observe what's going on and then you have an ishtagosti. You have a sangha, you come together and then you say, okay, don't point anybody out. You just say, okay, make sure we do this. This is going to happen. And in that way, it actually is, you can, like, digest that. Rather than if I just pick everyone out every single day and like that. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes that's the only way. You know, people are, you know, if you're passionate, you have an excuse and you're like, yeah, you know, I'd really like to be on time for something or whatever. Then, you know, sometimes they need help. You know, they're in the hallway talking and you got to go somewhere in 2 minutes. Then you say, hey, you know, you got 2 minutes. Sometimes you got to break up the conversation or something. But that's still service. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, the other day I was speaking to Max, our future God brother, and he was telling me something that was going on with him. He was talking about the cause of something. What causes something. And so we were kind of lightly talking about it, joking around. Like, I think he washed some clothes and it turned green or something. I was like, what's the cause of that? He said, I don't know. I said, well, we know that the ultimate cause is Krishna. Just kind of joking around. But this point of, like, you know, actually Krishna is the cause of all causes. I mean, if you don't know the immediate cause, but you know the ultimate cause, you can know something. The important thing. And in a similar way with the rules and regulations, we know that these rules and regulations are not the master's, but the servant of the master, which is to love Krishna, to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. And if you can remember just that one thing, that's really what you, the main thing you need. You know, you can, I was reading this, you know, I was reading about cold showers, you know. We were talking earlier about penances and the wrong consciousness. You take only cold showers, you do all this austerities. But, you know, you can approach, we read why cold water over hot water. Or for some, hot water is better than cold water. It depends on your situation. But it should be done in service. If you have a bodily problem and you need heat, it's your service to maintain the body properly. Or if you don't need that, you know, it's cold is considered to be cleaner and also helps with sense control. And we want to do all this to become attached to Krishna, to love Krishna. So you can boil it all, everything back down to that. Is that okay?
It's great, Prabhu.
Thanks. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Gaur Premanande.